Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today's program, we look at the national security state, free speech, and censorship in a post-9/11 world. We'll play excerpts from the award-winning documentary Project Censored, the movie, Ending the Reign of Junk Food News. And we'll speak with Christopher Finan, editor of the new book, National Security and Free Speech, The Debate Since 9/11, winner of the 2014 Hugh M. Hefner First Amendment Award. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today's program, we look at the national security state, free speech, and censorship in a post-9/11 world. We'll be featuring excerpts from the award-winning documentary Project Censored, the movie, Ending the Reign of Junk Food News. Later in the program, we'll speak with Christopher Finan, author most recently of a book called National Security and Free Speech, The Debate Since 9/11. But we begin the program today by looking at a film. It's called Project Censored, the movie, Ending the Reign of Junk Food News. This is the movie about Project Censored, where Peter and I work and direct, and Peter's president of the Media Freedom Foundation. And this film is, according to the filmmakers, determined to break the grip of junk food news on the American public. This film was made by two California fathers wanting to uncover the corporate media's true agenda and investigate the importance of a free and independent press. This film features original interviews with Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, Daniel Ellsberg, Nora Barrows-Friedman, Oliver Stone, Peter Kuznick, Greg Palast, Cynthia McKinney, Michael Parenti, Khalil Bendib, John Perkins, Abby Martin, people from Project Censored, crew, students, faculty, and more. We're going to share a clip of that film with you right now on the role of Project Censored.
Our role is to uncensor the news and let other people, let the public decide what the facts say and suggest. I think that's responsible journalism.
Project Censored is about stimulating social activism via, you know, real news and information that the public needs to become an informed electorate.
Now we're talking about stories that are deliberately being withheld from the American people.
Project Censored, the U.S. media watchdog group, has released its annual report examining the shortcomings of reporting in 2012. Amongst the key topics, the rising police state and the erosion of civil liberties.
We've really fallen in the United States back into a McCarthyite sensibility, a COINTELPRO kind of sensibility, where we see enemies everywhere and we've been cracking down on the very things that should be the bedrocks and foundations of our free society, on free speech, on the rights to petition government, on the rights of assembly.
A couple years ago, Student Project Censored interns and I wrote a chapter in the book on media coverage of the Military Commissions Act, which of course suspended habeas corpus. And one of the things we looked at in that study was how the corporate media coverage treated habeas corpus as a matter of legitimate political debate, that you could talk about whether it made sense to suspend in a time of a war on terror this fundamental principle of democracy that dates back to the year 1215. It's a foundation for any modern democratic society.
That's not quarter after noon. That's 1215. We're talking almost 800 years of due process rights that were wiped away in the Military Commissions Act in 2006. And even when the corporate press would cover that topic, they acted as if habeas corpus was debatable. They acted as, well, we're not sure. Is habeas corpus something we have? Is it something everybody should have? Should we all be free? Should we all have due process? And I think when you really start to ask those questions, you're already down the slippery slope and you're headed for trouble.
Loss of civil liberties by the American people is probably the biggest thing that's happened in this decade. I mean, now we no longer have habeas corpus. Any president can decide that you're an enemy combatant and put you in a military prison without trial, without lawyers, without access to your family, indefinitely, whether you're a citizen of the United States or not. They now have active military battalions on duty under the North American Command, ready to go and be police in any city in the United States. We have built detention centers throughout the country, $350 million that went to Halliburton 2 years ago to expand detention centers. They prepared for martial law. The president can authorize the Treasury to confiscate all of the assets of a person who interferes with progress of the war in Iraq. They can take your bank account, they can take your house, and they can make it against the law for your brother to buy you food or your lawyer to work pro bono for you. So these laws are in place. Now, they haven't enacted these things, but just the fact that they put these laws in place, that they're preparing, they're building an infrastructure to maintain martial law in this country in results of civil unrest, economic collapse, or whatever.
I do fear our government. I think it's become way too strong and too powerful and too invasive. To think that somebody can walk into my home and arrest me and I don't have the right to habeas corpus, which the Constitution gives me. They can haul me off if they can prove that there's any reason to suspect that I might be a traitor. And who's to define that? I mean, you know, am I a traitor because I wrote a book that criticizes the government? I don't think so at all. I think I'm a very, very loyal citizen because I think democracy is built on questioning.
The heart of what Project Censored does, which is we're often bringing forward stories that are deeply uncomfortable for the American public. Despite all the rhetoric about supporting the troops and our soldiers are our heroes, we have a situation where the social services they need coming home from having served the country, often those social services aren't available to them at the level or in the scope that they require. And the result, more soldiers were committing suicide than were dying in combat.
The number one story from 2012 was about the numbers of suicides that have been happening in the United States military. And it turns out that there were actually more suicides than there were deaths in wars.
By connecting citizen journalists all over the world and bringing out these stories that contradict the mainstream lies and challenge these paradigms is one of the most important tools that any journalist or any reader, any truth seeker should have in their toolbox.
No, until Project Censored came along, I wasn't aware that anybody else was doing anything like that. Of course, you had, you know, investigative journalists pointing out censorship, pointing out missed stories. But the systematic exposure of censored stories by Project Censored, you know, I think has been an important contribution.
We have to have Project Censored. Whoever came up with the idea of Project Censored is a genius because they allow us to know the things that other people would rather us not know.
Watergate itself was the actual inspiration for Project Censored. Why in the world Richard Nixon could be reelected by a vast majority some 5 months after Watergate, which was the largest political crime of the century, on the night of the election, there was no discussion whatsoever of Watergate. A lot of alternative publications were running, you know, regularly information about Watergate and all the rest, but the more I checked into the alternative press, the more stories I discovered that I hadn't heard about, I didn't know about, despite the fact that I like to think that I was on top of the media at the time, and that was the genesis of Project Censored.
Project Censored is the largest media research organization in the country that publishes the top 25 censored stories from the corporate press into a book every year.
Project Censored, the research is done by over 200 faculty and students. Students are actively looking for and researching important news stories and see, was this covered in the corporate media? And if it wasn't, and the class thinks this is an important story that we should investigate more completely, it'll go to a faculty evaluator. So if the story is in political science, it'll go to someone with a PhD in political science. We have over 100 faculty evaluators and community experts, doctors, lawyers. Students will write a summary of that, and it goes into a pool of stories. Then it's a voting process. We double-check the stories to make sure they haven't been run since we first checked them. And then we have national judges, people like Michael Parenti, Noam Chomsky has been a national judge with us. Then we vote on them. We pick the top 25.
Students are really amazing. Watching students develop from someone who's taking a class because they need 4 units credit to fulfill a requirement to they're on fire about the suspension of habeas corpus. And they care now passionately about that issue, and they're informed about that issue to the point that they can talk to their friends and their family and people in their community about that. Really, for me, is one of the crucial aspects of Project Censored.
Project Censored has given me what I've wanted, in the sense that I want to be informed. I want to know what's going on because it does affect me. I'm a person who believes it does affect my life.
What if just a big enough majority of people understood the truth? Could we actually make a change? When I think about that, that gives me hope, and I continue to do what I do, talk to people about what's really happening.
I was a kind of student that would just go to class, stay quiet, do the task, and that was it. I never talked to the instructor or anything. And after that, I was trying to get answers.
We began our college and university affiliate program, and what we did is we branched out from Sonoma State University. What would it look like if we were able to sort of take Project Censored on the road, kind of a thing? In other words, where else could people model this, right? Imagine what could happen if we had the kind of classes that Project Censored is involved in soc departments, but they could be in any kind of discipline.
I love connecting what we learn in the classroom to what's going on outside, and I think that for me, Project Censored fits perfectly because we're able to look at what's going on in corporate media and see what's being said and what's not being said, and then how we as students and teachers can identify things that aren't being talked about that really need to be out there. And to get your story that you've hunted down up on a website and to just be part of that process is empowering. It's enriching. It's so many different really great things for them.
I was realizing that this perfect world that America is, it wasn't perfect. And there were some imperfections that needed to be seen and brought to the public.
You know, I've always seen social ills as something that are fixable, I guess. For example, corporate media. If we all just let corporate media feed us what it is we're supposed to be learning, then we easily can forget about the stuff that really is harming our society.
Good evening and welcome to CMM, the corporate mainstream media news network. I'm Sold Out.
That was an excerpt from Project Censored, the movie, ending the reign of junk food news on the role of Project Censored, the research of Project Censored in promotion of media literacy and fighting censorship and maintenance of a truly free press. You can learn more at projectcensored.org or go to projectcensoredthemovie.com. The next segment we'd like to play from Project Censored, the movie, looks at the problem of what we call junk food news. So this is a term coined by Project Censored founder Dr. Carl Jensen that talks about not just what the news media don't cover, but actually talks about what the corporate news media do cover. And what he found was that it was called junk food news.
Junk food news, it appears to be like news the way Pringles appear to be food, right? You can snap these back, and an hour later, you're still hungry, but you have a stomachache too, right? And junk food news is, I think, the journalistic equivalent.
Norman Lear Foundation at USC did a survey recently, and it looked at the 11 o'clock news for months. Hours and hours and hours of the 11 o'clock news. They concluded that of all that time, over all those months, that the viewer was getting an average of 24 seconds out of that half hour. Just 24 seconds of community-based reporting of government. The rest was kicks, guts, and orgasms.
Corporate news right now, it gives you nuggets. It gives you little sensational items. And, you know, all of a sudden you have a scandal about Iraq. But it's just one little view into it.
I have 600 channels in my house. But 400 of them are selling the Bowflex machine. And the rest are jewelry and Jesus. This is not diversity.
The magician is doing this. The trick is happening down here. It's diversion, diversion of attention. So all the media spectacle, the game shows, the soap operas, the commercials, the buy this car, blah, blah, all that, it's diversion.
Corporate media react to Conan O'Brien's plan to officiate a same-sex wedding on late-night television.
Talk show host Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be able to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
With so many important issues facing the people of the world today, why does corporate media waste valuable airtime with irrelevant junk food news stories that come directly from entertainment sources?
God bless our media.
We got to get an envelope.
On this same day that corporate media bombarded the American public with the Conan O'Brien story, alternative news sources like Democracy Now! Reported the following news story.
Veterans are coming home and finding that we don't have access to proper medical care. We don't have access to jobs. We are having a difficult time getting the educational benefits that we were promised and that we served for. So, you know, I'm worried about how I'm going to feed my daughter and how I'm going to put her through college.
Let's set aside for just a moment, if you will, that much of what passes for news these days is not news.
This is our big problem, is that stuff that fills us up and gets us fat and stupid, but uninformed.
I'm so struck by the Tiger Woods incident. We criticized him because he had a sexual addiction, which, you know, really, his sexual addiction is not going to impact my 3-year-old grandson when he's my age. Nobody's ever going to remember.
I'm a little upset to see all this hoopla over that reporter who had that brain problem during the Golden Mics.
Well, a very, very heavy debatation tonight. We had a very Darrison bite. Let's go to Terrison for the bit.
To make her then the object of the story is wasting my time.
The story of Serene Branson has captivated the nation over the last week. The reporter for our Los Angeles station, KCBS-TV, was covering the Grammy Awards.
How is that going to make my life better? How is that going to improve things in my community? What does that say for broadcast journalism? As it turned out, we knew right away that nothing was seriously wrong. I mean, on and on and on of taking this valuable resource of time that we have and turning it into something less important.
Junk food news, of course, Carl started the category when he was challenged by news professionals who said, look, you know, it's not censorship. We just don't have enough time to cover all the important news that happens.
So I said, I think I'll take a hard look at what they're using to fill their time and space. Well, just about the same time, Clara Pella became famous overnight for saying, "Where's the beef?"
Hello?
Where's the beef?
So I checked into it, and I discovered that, indeed, they have a limited amount of time and space. And what are they filling it with? They're filling it with what I called junk food news. Where's the beef?
If you live abroad, the December 2011 issue of Time magazine featured an in-depth look at the revolution in the Middle East. In America, we got Why Anxiety is Good for You.
Yeah, news abuse was a category that Peter Phillips introduced to address, in some ways, a more subtle form of news bias. Stories that have some actual legitimate newsworthy quality, unlike their junk food counterparts, but where the way that the story is presented is so spun or so distorted that the ultimate point of the story gets lost. And this, too, is a form of propaganda. I think both junk food news and news abuse can be thought of as kind of propaganda.
So when we're rescuing Jessica Lynch, the young, beautiful private who's captured by the evil Iraqi, and then they have the troops come in, the special forces to save her. They waited 24 hours to even get the special forces there to get the cameras there to take the picture. So that was an alternative story to the day that we rolled the tanks into Baghdad, the day that we shelled the Palestinian hotel, killed two journalists there, the day we bombed Al Jazeera and killed a journalist there. But in the front pages of the United States, it's the rescue of Jessica Lynch. So that manipulation of news is deliberate. That's top-down control of news. And they'll fill it with sensationalized stories, tugging at your heart, oh, the poor girl, and in its place, you know, the realities of the tanks rolling, you know, over bodies in the streets of Baghdad is lost.
This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Christopher M. Finan is the president of the American Booksellers Foundation for Free Expression and the author of From the Palmer Raids to the Patriot Act, A History of the Fight for Free Speech in America. Most recently, he is editor of a book, brand new book, called National Security and Free Speech, The Debate Since 9/11. This is out on iDebate Press. National Security and Free Speech, The Debate Since 9/11 is a unique collection of sources that reveal the tensions between the desire to protect free speech and the necessity of protecting the nation. The anthology was developed with an understanding that readers need to engage this issue using a variety of sources: speeches, congressional testimony, reports, press releases, news articles, op-eds, court decisions, and legal briefs that highlight all sides of the debate. An original essay that Christopher Finan has written in, as part of this book, offers historical perspective on the conflict between national security and free speech. And this book includes the fight over reader privacy, gags and government secrecy, whistleblowers, government surveillance, and prosecuting terrorist quote-unquote supporters. Christopher Finan joins us on the phone today. Christopher, you're with us.
I'm here.
Christopher, thanks so much for taking time to join us, and thanks for all your great work combating censorship. It's a pleasure to work with you on Banned Books Week every year and be part of the National Coalition Against Censorship. Tell us about your recent project here, National Security and Free Speech, The Debate Since 9/11.
Well, as you well know, there are a lot of books on this subject, the subject of the tension between national security and free speech that has long existed in this country, but has come back with a vengeance, of course, since 9/11. But this is a book that is specifically addressed to kids, to middle school and high school kids. It's intended to be, it's a project of, you know, the International Debate Association, Education Association, which provides materials to debaters in schools around the country. And they have undertaken a couple of books with the Open Societies Foundation on various civil liberties issues that they have distributed to the schools to give kids an entree to these issues. And the National Security and Free Speech is the first book in the series to address specifically the post 9/11 issues. So it was was a great opportunity for me to try to find materials, to find the issues, to identify the issues, and then find the materials that would be of most interest to kids, and to get them to begin to understand the issues that are so much at play in the adult world and in the world that they will soon enter as voters.
Chris, hi, this is Peter Phillips. I'm looking through all the different authors you have in this book. There must be 30 or 40 different people, everyone from John Ashcroft to Glenn Greenwald, laying out the issues. And so that it seems more than this isn't just a middle school book. This would be something for anybody to really understand the importance of national security and free speech and the tensions and what the debate is about and having both sides of this issue presented very clearly in this book. It's a 360-page book available here at KPFA for a pledge today. And we really appreciate you coming on. What's happened in this debate since 9/11 overall?
Well, you know, it's been a long struggle, obviously. You know, there was in the initial stage, you know, we were all stunned after 9/11, and it took kind of the civil liberties community and its allies in the progressive world a while to get its act together and to begin to push back against some of the more overreaching efforts by the government to do what it felt it had to do to protect us. There was actually a lot of advocacy in the first couple of years leading up to the first reauthorization of the Patriot Act in 2005. There were petition campaigns. There was grassroots activity in the city level and the state level, passing anti-Patriot Act resolutions, and we came, you know, very close to getting significant changes in the Patriot Act in 2005, but fell short. After that, kind of the urgency of the issue, some of the urgency went out of the issue. You know, some of our worst fears in terms of what might happen didn't come to pass, or at least we couldn't see whether it was coming to pass. Part of the problem was secrecy prevents us from knowing what the government is doing to protect us. Until Edward Snowden's revelations, which have kind of completely changed the political situation again. And I'd say that, you know, we have made tremendous progress in the last year. There is new legislation in both the House and the Senate called the USA Freedom Act, which will begin to roll back some of the overbroad powers that the government has passed. And very remarkably, this week, two committees of the House Judiciary Committee and the House Intelligence Committee, both voted unanimously to send this bill to the floor. So there's a good chance we're going to see a major reform bill on the floor of both the House and the Senate this year. So we will be, I think, ginning up again our advocacy efforts and asking people to reach out to their elected representatives in support of this bill. But of course, even the passage of any single piece of legislation isn't going to solve the problem. There will continue to be tension. Secrecy will continue to be a problem for us in understanding what the government is doing. And but, you know, there's a section in the book about whistleblowers, about, you know, the key role that whistleblowers play in informing us of what's going on. And hopefully, you know, we will be able to continue to protect them and learn from them, you know, what we need to know.
Well, Chris Finan, certainly at Project Censored, our 2014 book, Fearless Speech in Fateful Times, highlights the importance of whistleblowers, a long time highlighting the significance of what's happening with government surveillance. And your new book, your collection here, National Security and Free Speech, The Debate Since 9/11, goes into detail about a lot of those issues, shows multiple sides of the conflict over civil liberties. And in fact, you go up pretty close to the present, you have some segments on CIA, NYPD, infiltration of mosques in New York.
Right. And, of course, some of the good news there is that under the new de Blasio administration, the police department has announced that it is dismantling the very controversial program that it undertook of monitoring Muslim communities without any evidence of criminal activity. Bringing back some of the worst abuses of the 60s and the 70s by police departments. So we've seen some progress there, and so there are, you know, there are hopeful developments, but as the book makes clear, the historical essay at the beginning of the book, which really takes this all the way back to the Alien and Sedition Acts, this tension. This is a tension that's always going to exist. It's a fight that's always going to have to be fought, and that's why it's important that kids understand and adults as well. You know, the nature of the battles that are currently engaged in.
Christopher Finan, thanks so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to be in the fight with you. Your new work is National Security and Free Speech, the debate since 9/11. Chris Finan, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, guys.
That was the voice of Christopher M. Finan, the president of the American Bookseller Foundation for Free Expression and the author of From the Palmer Raids to the Patriot Act, A History of the Fight for Free Speech in America. His most recent book is edited, National Security and Free Speech, the Debate Since 9/11. You can learn more at iDebate Press. Here is another clip from Project Censored the Movie, ending the reign of junk food news.
Implicitly, we have a concentrated, top-down corporate media system that's primarily oriented to make money and provide entertainment, and is increasingly a propaganda machine for the military media industrial complex of the United States.
The stations used to be family-owned. Guess what? They're all gone. They're all owned by multinational corporations.
The country is run by a few big interests looking after themselves and not for the benefit of the population.
Well, the corporate media does it by the book. They do the time life approach. They go down the middle. They never say anything too controversial. If you try, like, to criticize Westmoreland in Vietnam, you get into a whole scandal like Dan Rather did, and you don't get away with that stuff. So as a result, they barrier everything to death, and it becomes sanitized and boring.
The way it works is, and I've been in these conversations, this is how it works on the inside. You have the responsibility for a newscast. And every morning the scoreboard lights up. Hear the demographics from last night. Here's what you did with Network X. Here's what your competition did. By the way, they handed your head to you last night. Because we think they concentrated on the story most people wanted to hear. Paris Hilton, murder case on the West Coast. You insisted on leading with something, an international story. And here's what Network Y did. That's the way the pressure works on you.
Censorship is one of our most serious problems, if not the most serious problem. And I think we have to look at censorship as taking many different forms. But there's this much more subtle form of censorship, which is exercised every day by the mainstream press. Mainstream press is a good way to put it, where the owners censor it. I talked recently to a very high-up reporter in one of the major U.S. newspapers, the New York Times, and he said, you know, I'm not censored. I can write anything I want and turn it into my editor, but he decides what to publish and what not to publish. And if he doesn't publish any of my stories for a couple of weeks, I lose my job. So theoretically, I'm not censored. Nobody puts black lines through sentences. It's not the old-fashioned form, but he's censored.
Fear permeates every newsroom in the country. One of the fears is that our circulation will go down, or our ratings will go down, or our demographic will go down. And I do not accept myself in this criticism. It is, listen, somebody else is running the story that I don't think ought to be the lead story. But for 10 days, they've been on a ratings climb and we've been on a ratings decline. And the reason entertainment values have reached the point where they've almost tsunami-like overwhelmed news values is this reality. If you continue to lose demographics, you continue to lose in the ratings, you probably aren't going to last.
Good evening, and welcome to CMM, the corporate mainstream media news network. I'm Hallie Burton.
In today's news, Americans are breathing a sigh of relief as Congress has agreed to bail out our struggling banking industry, saving our country from a deeper recession and economic collapse. In other news, Lindsay Lohan was implicated for allegedly stealing jewelry. And Charlie Sheen, he's back in rehab.
The corporations control the world today. There was a time not so long ago, a few hundred years ago, when geopolitics of the world was controlled by religious organizations. And then it was governments. And you had some totalitarian governments, you had some democratic governments, but governments really ran things. Today it's the big corporations.
The antitrust safeguards is where it had been put there around the third, back in the 30s, had been completely dismantled or ignored by the courts. So we need to go back to basics and enforce our own rules. The elites have gotten to a point where they're above the rules, as we are seeing now with the economy. And that's obscured by our media, who are complicit and part of the same clique. And we need to dismantle all of that through reforms and just say, no, let's go back. The rules actually say this. We need to enforce this.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. This is Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. For the last segment of the show today, the last five so odd minutes we have, we'd like to call attention to a couple of guys that have been making a film about media censorship. So that's certainly right up our alley.
In 1996, Congress passed the Telecommunications Act, which led to a gold rush of media mergers and takeovers in the United States. Today, fewer than five major media corporations dominate U.S. news and information systems.
As a student of Project Censored, we discussed the spin that corporate media used when describing the Telecommunications Act of 1996. It was supposed to create competition among media corporations, ultimately benefiting the American public with increased relevant news.
You've been traveling around the country for the last 5 years now, getting this kind of footage, right? And you're putting together this story of media censorship, propaganda.
The fact that we have censorship in our media is not an occurrence that happens because of ignorance. It is something that happens because of deliberate policy.
What the corporate media do, basically, is they parrot the arguments of the administration. They don't challenge the administration. They report the administration. But in reporting them, they are giving the administration the airwaves. They're giving them the platform. They're crowding out everything else. They're not reporting the views of the opposition. And so all that the public gets is the statements of the political leaders of the country.
I get invited to be on right-wing radio and right-wing TV because they want to have some lefty straw man that they can slap around. So I've been on Hannity and Combs and Greta Van Susteren and those kind of shows. And it's interesting, Hannity and Combs, you see how it works. You're in a remote studio, you got super bright lights in your face, you can't see the camera, you got no monitors, you can't see what they're doing, and you've got a little earpiece in your ear that when it comes time for you to talk, they turn up the volume on the B-roll at some demonstration, and Hannity is saying, I want you to denounce these violent protesters. I say, well, I denounce all violence. Yeah, but I want you to denounce these particular protesters. And unless you say what they want you to say, they're not going to let you continue. They're going to keep interrupting you.
We can see this quite clearly in the news coverage after the 9/11 attacks. Has media's criticism of the government become unpatriotic?
I know what
Shut
I was
up.
Doing.
Shut up. In respect for your father, who was a port authority worker, a fine American, who got killed unnecessarily by barbarians.
By radical extremists trained by this government.
Respect
not
for
the
him.
People of America,
I'm not
the people, the ruling
you.
Class, a small minority.
Cut his mic.
There has to be really, really clear separation between the media and the government and media and corporations.
The media has a tremendous influence in the development of public policy and in the way in which public policy is implemented.
The American public are the true owners of the American airways in America, not the corporations.
You take away that family pride, community owned, and you no longer have
any kind of compelling reason to tell the real truth and to really go underneath the layers and cover a community like it needs to be covered.
I get invited to be on Right Wing Radio and Right Wing TV because they want to have some lefty straw man that they can slap around. So I've been on Hannity and Combs and Greta Van Susteren and those kind of shows. And it's interesting, Hannity and Combs, you see how it works. You're in a remote studio, you got super bright lights in your face, you can't see the camera, you got no monitors, you can't see what they're doing, and you've got a little earpiece in your ear that when it comes time for you to talk, they turn up the volume on the B-roll at some demonstration, and Hannity is saying, I want you to denounce these violent protesters. I say, well, I denounce all violence. Yeah, but I want you to denounce these particular protesters. And unless you say what they want you to say, they're not going to let you continue. They're going to keep interrupting you.
We can see this quite clearly in the news coverage after the 9/11 attacks. Has media's criticism of the government become unpatriotic?
I know what I was doing.
Shut up. In respect for your father, who was a port authority worker, a fine American, who got killed unnecessarily by barbarians.
By radical extremists,
yeah.
Fine. Trained by this government.
Respect
not
for
the
him.
People of America.
I'm not
the people, the ruling
you.
Class, the small minority.
Cut his mic.
There has to be really, really clear separation between the media and the government and media and corporations.
The media has a tremendous influence in the development of public policy and in the way in which public policy is implemented.
The American public are the true owners of the American airways in America, not the corporations.
You take away that family pride, community owned, and you no longer have any kind of compelling reason to tell the real truth and to really go underneath the layers and cover a community like it needs to be covered.
The information that the public gets is very poor. They are not told the truth about what is going on. And so the corporate media, simply play a role in reinforcing whatever deceptions are being carried out by the government.
We came to the conclusion from a lot of the interviews we conducted with these, we would call them critics of corporate mainstream media or former corporate mainstream media anchors, and the really came out of it was you've got this major fear component to news and also this distraction piece, this let's divide the nation against each other. And when you divided a nation against each other, you know, that's when nations fall victim and prey to war.
If large corporate newspapers and TV stations were to just stop feeding this frenzy of fear and difference.
But they keep us on this sort of on the edge of this cliff. Might happen. Fear is a big factor in telling news in America today. Fear the rain, fear the traffic, fear the mechanic, fear the mailman, fear this, fear that, to the point where you're so uneasy after watching the news, local news, that you feel, well, I watch local news to find out what's happening in my community. Instead, I'm walking away needing a Xanax, you know, because, you know, all they did is scare me. But it's intentional. The marketers say if you scare them enough, they like that. Scare me. And people will start watching your news.
That was a clip from Project Censored, the movie, Ending the Reign of Junk Food News. You can learn more at projectcensoredthemovie.com. This documentary, Project Censored, the movie, Ending the Reign of Junk Food News, is about the whole U.S. media system. It's not just about the work of Project Censored. You've been listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today we looked at national security state free speech and censorship in a post 9/11 world. We were featuring clips from the movie Project Censored, the movie Ending the Reign of Junk Food News. We also spoke with Christopher M. Finan, editor of the new award-winning book, National Security and Free Speech, The Debate Since 9/11. You're tuned to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. Special thanks to our producer, Anthony Fest, and Kirsten Thomas at the controls. The Project Censored Show airs on over a dozen stations around the United States. Archives can be found online at projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook. And if you'd like to contact us, you can email us through projectcensored.org. Learn more about Project Censored the Movie at projectcensoredthemovie.com. See you next time.